Howdy, neighbors. Ron Hayes with you today, welcoming you to another Ag Perspectives podcast, a very special podcast today as we offer up the full presentation made by the president and CEO of Tyson Foods, Tom Hayes, to the Summer Cattle Industry Conference going on in Denver, Colorado. His presentation was made on Thursday, August 2nd. He offered remarks and then engaged in a Q&A with Kevin Ochsner of Cattleman to Cattleman.
Well, thank you very much. Am I on? Yeah, okay, good. Thank you for the chance to have to speak to you today, and I'm happy to be doing this in Denver. I have not been to Colorado a bunch, but I have an uncle that had a ranch here in Hudson. Oh, that sounds better. Hudson, Colorado. I was talking to Kevin about that. He's since passed, but was a pilot for Western Airlines, and he really appreciated his life in Colorado, and he did have a small amount of cattle and a big amount of corn. I really do appreciate the chance to talk to you in this setting. I want to start by saying a couple things. You know, beef is a critical business to Tyson Foods, as you well know, and I had a chance to spend some time with some of our best producers today, three folks that spent about an hour with me and my team talking about the business. And it was exciting to hear a lot of things that are going on, but I was more excited just to spend the time with those gentlemen learning about some things that are important to them. And, you know, a couple of anecdotes from that session I would say that stood out to me is that we are absolutely all in the food business. And, you know, sometimes we don't always think about that, but we raise animals for harvest, but we are in the food business. And for us, you know, when we think about what the consumer experiences from the steak that they eat on their plate or the hamburger all the way back through the supply chain, that's where we feel like at Tyson Foods we can play a big role in bringing everybody to the table to have a conversation about the industry. They also told me there's a lot on your mind, and there's a lot of things that could be, you know, potentially controversial. I think the most important one was, Kevin and I will probably talk about it, is alternative proteins and different types of proteins that we are either investing in or merchandising through our prepared foods business. Happy to talk about that. You know, alternative proteins are things that, you know, we believe are going to be a part of the equation. We don't want to be on the outside looking in. We want to sort of actively disrupt ourselves. But at the same time, we are really focused on the business that we're in to make it better and better every day. And so that's also what I want to spend, you know, quite a bit of time talking about. Important to us today is to talk about international trade. We are very affected by trade, not just in the beef business, but also in our pork business and other areas. It is something that we are actively engaging the government on, and I have been to D.C. We have people that have been to D.C. We've spent time with not only the Congress, but talking to the White House. And we are very focused on making sure that they understand the pain that is created when we don't have open access to the markets. And that is something that is important to us at Tyson. We know it's important to you and your businesses. So a couple of things about how we're thinking about our business. You know, one of the most important things I think we can do as an industry is to continue to focus on sustainability. I heard some great conversation today, not just in our session we had this morning with our producers, but also just in some conversations outside of that, that there is so much going on in what you're doing to make your operations more sustainable. For us, it's pretty clear that there's a huge challenge where by 2030, there will be another billion people on our planet. By 2050, another 2 billion people. And everybody is looking for protein and ways to nourish themselves, and that is an enormous responsibility. At the same time, we want to do it with the same or less resources, which is also a challenge. So we're proud to be a part of the U.S. Roundtable for Sustainable Beef, as well as some of our, you know, partners are here, making our industry, through investment and collaboration, stronger and stronger is the road forward from my perspective and our perspective at Tyson. All of you, I'm sure, are involved in this in some way. You've been making more with less. You've been raising more cattle with less acreage. And I know that there's a mindset here, because I've heard it, of continuous improvement. And that's extremely important to us as we continue to solve what could be the challenges of feeding the world. As Kevin said, we are the largest U.S. food company by sales, so $40 billion of sales. It's a lot. I would say the biggest part of our business is beef. And so there's also a question that has been asked about, so is beef, you know, really important to you? Because it's been important to IBP. Is it important to Tyson? And I can tell you, that, you know, depending upon the year, $15 to $17 billion worth of our sales. It is very important to Tyson Foods and something that we continue to invest in, whether it's on the sustainability front or at the plant level. Over the last 5 years in our beef operations, we spent about $400 million upgrading predominantly material handling, trying to make our jobs easier at the plant. And we have a lot of investments in our case-ready operations today, and we plan to make more investments tomorrow. So we are, what I said to Kevin and I were chatting about this, I said, make sure that if you think about our investment, that's the best way to judge whether or not, you know, we are truly in this together. And then just on that topic, I think it's important to go back to this idea of collaboration. If, in fact, you know, there's one thing that I'd like everybody to take away, is that our Tyson team has, you know, certainly a mouth, but they also have, you know, 2 ears as you're talking to them. Our team members want to listen and play that role as almost the convener or the middle of the supply chain between the consumer, the customer, the packer, and the producer to bring the best solutions forward so we can make our industry great long into the future. So that investment that we make is one thing, but the collaboration, the way that we bring people together, is really going to be something that will set us apart. You know, we do have the challenge of sustainability, greenhouse gases. We've made a huge commitment to reduce GHGs by 30% by 2030. And that's, for us in our system, we are about 10% of our total supply chain. 90% of what our footprint has is outside of our current supply chain. And but that's okay. That's just emphasizes the point that I just made. It's important for us as a entire supply chain and industry to stay focused on what are those things we can do together to help win. We did make a commitment to land stewardship. I don't know if you've heard this or not, but it takes about 2 million acres of corn to feed our entire poultry business. And we announced publicly by 2020 we're going to have a system in place to make 2 million acres sustainable through a stewardship project. And we believe those things will continue to put us in the forefront where consumers look at us and say, you're doing the right things. I love your products. I'm going to continue to support you because you are being transparent in your everything that you do. Not always easy, because I think, particularly in our poultry business, we've been hurt by, you know, transparency and some of the issues that have where we have our supply chain not doing what we should be doing, but that's not going to stop us. What we want to do is own the areas where we're poor and make sure that we continue to improve ongoing into the future. And so in our beef business, it's no different. Today we talked at our group setting about traceability and how important that is to the entire industry. And the consumer wants it. It's not just, you know, our industry that's going to sort of the supply chain back towards the packer, the producer. That's not the only place that it's going to be helpful. It's the entire supply chain. Traceability matters in a big way. We believe that product innovation is going to be also the way of the future. Things that, for us, we have been really amping up are our premium programs, and premium can come in a lot of different forms. We have been doing a lot of work against our Chairman's Reserve brand and Chairman's Natural Products. Open Prairie is an example of where we've grown that very small business, but we've grown it substantially year over year as consumers are looking for more premium products. So that's something you can help us with, too, and a lot of you already have helped us. We have way more black cattle in our system today than we did even just a couple of years ago as customers like Walmart really push us to go to that direction. And it's helpful because we know that if we can continue to make the industry more premium, then there should be more money for everybody, and it should satisfy the most important thing, which is the consumer demand. And then we have some smaller parts of our business. We have this thing called Tyson Tastemakers, which is a meal kit. It started out as a meal kit that you deliver directly to consumers, and now it's morphed into a lot of different varieties. Our plant in Emporia, Kansas, does this for us. We're very small runs right now, but puts together vegetables and beef and other proteins into a package that a consumer can just make a meal out of one package. Sort of, we call it the one-pan dish approach. The other thing is, just to hit this straight up, and happy to talk about it more. I know that we'll have some questions here, but we have made that investment in Future Meats as well as Memphis Meats, and I want to make sure it's clear what our position is, because that could be seen as being at direct competition with certainly beef, but also pork and chicken, I'd say. And our position is, if we don't actively, invest in those categories, and Tyson is an investor in Memphis Meats, as is Cargill, that we will not learn what we need to in order to make our system sustainable and long into the future, but also, come back to those key things that consumers are looking for that they want and the reasons why they might be attracted to some of these categories. So we're a minority investor. We don't own anything outright, but I can tell you we are learning a lot. And our position, I think you probably know this, we've been on record with it, is we don't like the idea of using clean meat for this product. That suggests that the rest of our system is not clean, which is not true. And so we've been very focused on, well, what would be the right nomenclature? And from our perspective, it's something that is some modifier, but a meat alternative. And so there's more to be played out in there. I think the USDA will ultimately be making the decision on this, but we are extremely supportive of making sure that the rules of the road are clear and they're the same. We don't think it's an either-or situation. We know it's going to be a yes-and. Consumers, even though it's a small part, consumers are going to want choices. And we do, at our heart, think that consumer choice is a good thing to focus on to thrive as a major food company. On international, this is a growing part of our business. We cannot be successful without the international trade. It's today 12% of our total business, so more than $4 billion of our sales go export. And we have a very small business in China and India, but we are exporting a lot of food around the world, and that's important to us to make sure that those channels stay open. And so we do spend a lot of time talking to legislators and people that have the decision-making authority. Unfortunately, it seems that there's only one person that really has the decision-making authority, but we've got his ear from time to time, too. So we will continue to fight the good fight to try to make sure markets stay open, but we are very focused on that for all livestock producers, not just beef. So thank you for all the good work that you're doing. We know that there's a lot that goes into convening a group like this. I've been told by many that, I need to not just come to this meeting, but I need to go to the winter meeting, which is really where all the action happens, where there's 10,000 people in a warm climate. And I said, I'd like to speak at that meeting instead of this meeting. I quickly learned that Terry Bradshaw is going to be the keynote speaker there. So hard to compete with him. But I do appreciate the time that you spend together. And you are a powerful group that can actually make change in our industry. And so you putting pressure on our legislature and our Congress is great. The USDA, working with the USDA, in fact, being in all the venues you are, I really appreciate your efforts. We do have many offices around the world trying to push our agenda in terms of global expansion. We are opening two more offices to try to sell more of our products, particularly in beef, around the world, an office in Colombia and also an office in the Philippines. And we are pretty global. Not a lot of people know that in terms of our presence, but we are continuing to expand there. And so I do want to take the time just to say at the end here, thank you very much. I'm going to take some questions for sure. And I'm happy to, as much as I can, interact with anybody here. But if you have questions that go unanswered, please reach out to our team. I keep looking over here because two of our team members are here. And but they're happy to hopefully convince you that we not only want to value our partnerships, and we have valued our partnership to this point, but that we're hip to hip trying to drive our industry to the future that we know it can be by being a sustainable and competitive business that meets consumer needs. So thank you very much. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Well, fantastic. Not often do you have an opportunity for a dialogue with the CEO of the largest food company in the United States, and so thank you for giving us that privilege. You know, broadly speaking, a couple of thoughts that I had. Just give us what you would perceive to be maybe some of the biggest challenges and the biggest opportunities for Tyson. You mentioned a couple, but I'd be curious to have you prioritize those.
Yeah, sure. So I think the biggest opportunity, hit it a lot, hopefully people took it away, is that there is definitely a need for us to become more sustainable and focused on transparency. As I go to a lot of consumer conferences, what I will get is a fair bit of criticism about, you know, the industry that we're making our livelihoods in, and I don't like it. Mm-hmm. And so I think that is a challenge and an opportunity for us to take a leadership stance to say, well, here's what you don't know about our industry. And if I can get the transparency, if we can have the traceability, and I can say, here are the facts, mm-hmm. instead of here are the myths. And at the North American Meat Institute, some of you may know Janet Riley. She spends a lot of her time, you know, with Mythbusters, saying, here are the things that, you know, you absolutely should know about our business. Mm-hmm. And then I also say that trade, you know, making sure all markets are open to us. I think those are the two biggest things I think of to make sure that we continue to grow is opening up markets and making sure that people know our industry is incredibly sustainable.
Yeah. Do you have any thoughts about what as it relates to trade? I mean, do you anticipate this being a short-term issue or a longer-term issue, or hard to tell just when this will be resolved?
You know, it's hard to tell. And for those of you that are Tyson stockholders, I apologize that we have had a dip this week because yeah, we pre-announced that took our earnings total fiscal 18 guidance down, and it's based largely, not only, but largely due to the fact that we have had some issues as it relates to, you know, trade affecting particularly the pork business. And so we are hopeful that things get resolved quickly from a financial perspective. And at the same time, it doesn't feel like there's any immediate solve. So I would love to know the ultimate game, you know, the strategy. I think that for the most part, people are sort of with the idea that we want change,
right.
But maybe somewhat impatient that we need this to go quicker and have a line of sight to what is the end game.
Right. You mentioned sustainability and commented that you've committed to 30% reduction in greenhouse gases by 2030. You've made some significant commitments relative to crop production, land stewardship. We just got done, and we have the Environmental Stewardship Award winners sitting in this room. We just got done celebrating the good kinds of things they're doing from an environmental standpoint across the country. I'm curious to know, Tom, what do you expect from us as producers in terms of how we should collaborate with you in that effort? What are your expectations?
I think that is an excellent question, and my answer is communication. It's the same thing I told the guys today. If we can engage and you can utilize Tyson, I would say other packers as well, as a place, you know, to have dialogue about how the total industry can get better, we have influence. We have influence because we can talk to the ultimate consumer. We can talk to the customer, that, you know, the retailers and food service operators in between. And they have a very large voice. I think maybe Gail from Wendy's is here. Is she here? Yeah, there she is. Hey, Gail, I heard you were here. they are, you know, a huge proponent of the industry. So if we have, you know, customers, consumers, you know, the food manufacturers and the food producers together talking about how we support our industry, mm-hmm. I mean, it's lights out. I mean, we'll be able to do it. It's when we start to fraction off and the relationship become more tactical and less strategic, mm-hmm. that we end up, you know, really having a problem.
As you talk to consumer groups, what are the criticisms that they levy on our industry as it relates to sustainability, and what are the focal areas that you think, from an outsider's perspective looking in, you would say, hey, if you want to be a long-term producer of beef cattle, here's a couple of areas that I'd like your industry to focus on.
Yeah, I think the number one would be certainly animal welfare. We talked about that quite a bit. I know that there's a lot of focus on that. And I think that's probably for the cattlemen, it's the least of the worries. For us in the chicken business, it's a bit more of a issue. Mm-hmm. But I'd say secondarily, it's really focusing on what are the things that we can do to make incremental improvements in how much resources, and when it's in our best interest, less resources, you know, more profit, that we can use in order to raise what we are. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I was in Ireland about 3 or 4 weeks ago. I met with, you may know, Bord Bia and Origin Green. They are, you know, funded by the Irish government, but very focused on Irish, you know, beef exports. And they have a system. You know, we have an emerging system with the U.S. Roundtable and the pilot that we're doing there. And so I would say it's just getting involved, you know, getting involved with those things that can make incremental improvements, because it's not about solving something, you know, right away. It's just making things better over time.
Right.
Yeah.
That leads me to another question. You'd mentioned the alternative proteins.
Yep.
And I would say, you know, as a beef producer myself, I was a little offended by the Inc. magazine article earlier this fall that really positioned, you know, that as clean meat.
Yep.
I gathered from your comments that you're maybe not real supportive of the term clean meat. There may be other. Did I gather correctly? What would you prefer to call that? Is it clean meat? Is it cultured meat? Is it lab grown meat?
I think we're okay with anything that differentiates it from animal meat. So okay. If it's somehow, you know, a modifier, whether it's cultured meat alternative or lab grown meat or something that says it, so it's the consumer's going to read right through it anyway. Mm-hmm. So I think that's important for us to make sure that there's a distinction. And we've been pretty clear about that with our point of view, and hopefully that's where it'll wind up. I suspect it will, mm-hmm. But you know that's our view.
That's to be determined. And similarly, there was obviously a hearing a couple of weeks ago that NCBA was very involved in D.C. relative to how do we regulate this, and is this something that should be regulated like other meat through USDA? Should it be regulated through FDA? Does Tyson have any thoughts about the jurisdiction of a product like this?
Yeah, our thoughts are the jurisdiction should be USDA, FSIS, and the reason I say that is because it goes even beyond this subject. There are so many areas of duplication with FDA and USDA that, you know, in some ways you could argue that there needs to be just one agency, right, that's focused on food, and that's USDA. And that's, you know, subject for another day, but I think the important point is we want to have one set of rules, so we want to have, you know, want to have different approaches to this. And so our point of view is that we work with the USDA, also the FDA, but we think that they have, you know, the right approach.
Fantastic. Yeah. Just a question, I guess, from a business perspective. You've had a very successful career in business. You know, I look at this new type of protein as a disruptor to our industry. And in some of the consulting work I do, we talk about, you know, whether it's Uber and Lyft that has disrupted the taxi industry or whether it's Netflix that disrupted the entertainment industry. We shouldn't be surprised that there are products and services that are disrupting our industry. Just what business advice would you give us as producers, and how do you as a business person take a look at a potentially disruptive technology, product, competitor, et cetera? What guidance would you give us to succeed in a disruptive world?
Yeah. First thing I'd say is always be looking around the corner. It is something you want to have knowledge about. And we talk about, once we start to disparage, you know, that Inc. Article that you mentioned,
yeah.
And you told me this at lunch here, very disparaging against our business and our industry, I think that's a poor way to manage, and consumers will see that too. So I think it's what is the productive way to approach your business. The second thing is just to be a really strong proponent of it and continuously improve it. I hate to go back to the, you know, Irish beef example, but they're doing an amazing job of making sure that, you know, they are looking at all things that could be supportive of their industry and their products. So as business people, You're looking for ways every day, trying to make your life better, trying to make more money, trying to improve things. And I think that is my advice. I don't know the answer, but I do know if you continuously improve, that's a great step.
Put you in a strong position.
Yeah, my opinion. Yeah.
We've seen over the last couple of years a couple of your competitors who had ownership stakes in feedlots exit that space and sell their feedlots. I'm curious to know from Tyson's perspective, do you anticipate your supplies of contracted cattle to grow or shrink or stay about the same, or what do you anticipate for Tyson?
That's a good question. I don't know that it'll necessarily increase dramatically. They may stay roughly about the same. Maybe it depends on what demand is doing at the time. But I will share that, as I said in my opening comments, we have seen a dramatic shift, right? So whether it's if we have a very small business today in antibiotic-free, but all of our natural programs are growing like crazy. So I think the mix will shift. I don't know if the total changes that much, but the mix is definitely already shifting and will continue to shift in the way of those premium programs.
But as we were talking at lunch, it can be difficult for somebody like you to explain to Wall Street investors the volatility in this business. Is that fair?
It's awful. Yeah, it's it's because we're what we call a hybrid company, which we love it, and at the same time, it's really hard to explain because we have half of our portfolio that is tied to commodities and will swing pretty wildly, and roughly half that is generally more stable in prepared foods. Poultry is a little bit up against some headwinds here recently, but I'd say that is a challenge with investors, and they look at us to say, well, how can I see past that? And what we say is it judges over the long term. So we're going to have dips. We're going to go back and forth, and this group well knows that there are good times, bad times. But if you look sort of at our charts, it should be moving up and to the right in terms of total shareholder return, and that's what we're attempting to do.
Fantastic. Yeah. We were talking over lunch, and I wanted to follow up on that conversation. You made a comment to me. You said, judge us by our investment. And I noted you said you made a $400 million upgrade, right? Not only the plants, but you've also made significant investments in terms of value-added products that you had and case-ready sort of things. Can you detail some of the investments you've made specifically in the beef industry and maybe even give us an indication of what you continue to plan without showing your whole card? What investments specifically have you made to commit yourself to the long-term future of the beef industry?
Yeah, the most significant that do have, because we are, the packer, they are the plants, right?
Yep.
But I would say the beyond capital investment, we have made significant investment in our people. So one of the challenges, as you may well imagine, as a packer, we have a lot of jobs in our plants. If you go to Dakota City, it feels like a small city, the plant itself. And we have a lot of folks that come to work every day expecting to stay safe. And we have really spent a lot of time, energy, and money on our safety programs to make sure that they not only leave in the condition that they arrived in, but even better, with a continuous improvement mindset. We want them to be, in a better position financially, health-wise, when they leave.
Yeah.
And we've made substantial improvements. So even though labor is getting more difficult to find, our retention at our plants has actually gone up because people choose to work for Tyson versus a competitor because of the focus we have on safety. Outside of that, it's what I mentioned along the same lines, which is automating those jobs that are the most difficult, whether it's box handling or doing things that are repetitive or trying to automate and bring in robotics where we can, but eliminate the jobs that are the most difficult at the plants.
I read a report, and I think I saw Don Close here from Rabo earlier this week, that talked about the challenge of labor in the entire packing industry and what it may mean, trying to make projections, particularly in the pork industry with all these new pork plants coming on board. What guidance would you give us? I mean, how big a threat is that relative to the industry and being able to get and keep enough labor to actually process the products that we're producing?
I'd say it's a big threat. And so I think what you should continue to ask for are the ways in which we can make it easier to get people into the plants. And we want to have our business is built on immigrants. And we are proud of that fact because when we go to our plants, we are happy that we have programs like Upward Academy that help immigrants sort of move to the next level, whether it's English as a second language or financial skills or citizenship. You know, we are spending money to help them come up the curve. We want them to be legal immigrants that we bring through the system, because a lot of those jobs aren't for people that are second, third generation Americans. They definitely, you know, it's a challenge to find people that want to do that work. Simultaneously, we're also trying to, you know, reduce those most difficult jobs such that, you know, it's a lot easier to work in one of our plants. But I'd say it is a challenge, and I think the solutions are trying to make sure that we have, you know, the right programs to make sure that the folks that we do have enter our workforce stay with us and don't turn over.
You mentioned this in your remarks relative to antibiotics and just a moment ago in terms of maybe an increasing demand for some of your specialty products, some of which are, you know, no antibiotic kind of products. Lots have been written and lots of discussion across the industry right now about antimicrobial resistance, about our role in livestock production and managing that or helping to manage that. And you hear the term quite often, Tom, no antibiotics ever. I was doing a project earlier where I was talking to some people in the poultry industry that cautioned us to say, gosh, in some cases the poultry industry has put themselves in a bit of a box going there because it doesn't give you much of an alternative. I'm curious to know, what is the future in your business with a no antibiotics ever label? And broadly speaking, I'm sure it's a question you get often. What guidance would you give us relative to how we manage and handle antibiotics?
So I'll talk about Tyson and then, you know, how to manage. As it relates to what we're doing, we have definitely in our poultry system gone entirely antibiotic free, and it's a lot easier to do with a chicken.
Sure.
You know, a life cycle of chickens, not the life cycle of cattle. And so that's definitely but the hurdle was, you know, even though it's easier, was it was hard to get there because everything has to be absolutely, you know, well maintained. The animal husbandry has to be, you know, picture perfect. And so it puts a premium on how you have to operate. And so for sure, that was not easy. You know, as you move sort of to hogs and then cattle, it becomes a lot easier or a lot harder because of the life cycle, the lifespan. But I'd say, again, where for me this is more of a how things morph with consumers over time, there seems to be less focus on those poultry, where there's a lot of focus on it. There was less focus on hogs and cattle. But our open prairie natural line, we do have no antibiotics ever pork and beef, and those lines are growing.
They're growing.
So the consumers are saying, yeah, that's interesting to me. I'll just finish by saying what you can do is decide whether or not you want to participate in that growth. And so there's not every operation is going to be NAE overnight, but you might think about, you know, how you step into it. And some of our partners are actually doing that right now.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And I guess another question I would ask to that end, I'm always curious about what we can learn from other species. So I'm intrigued about a person in your role who has purview and in one day can be in Memphis Meats and another day can be in a pork plant and a third day be part of your value-added business in a grocery store and another day be in a poultry division or beef division. What should we learn from some of our protein competitors? I'm curious, what are some of the things that some of those other folks do better than beef? What are some things that we do better? Because I think this group in here wants to try to figure out how do we capitalize on our competitive advantage and how do we build that. So from an outsider's perspective looking in, just give me the top-of-mind thoughts.
Yeah, I hate to keep beating this drum, but it is it's about collaboration. I wouldn't say that they're really different, but I would say in areas of, you know, the poultry business and in our pork business with the producers that we have, and I would also say in our cattle operations, beef operations, where we have the best results are with those producers that are talking about, you know, improving and making, you know, change with us. Cutting across each one of the individual proteins, you know, to me is It's a blessing and a curse. It's a blessing in the sense that, you know, we do get to see a lot, and we are playing, you know, a big role in terms of, you know, global food production. But the difficult side of that can be, you know, an expectation that the grass is greener on the other side.
I got to tell you
that every area has its day. So that's one of the things we love about our company is we do have diversity in the protein types. But don't assume that the short leggers, as they say,
I don't think anybody in here would use that term, would we, Kendall? Yeah.
or the poultry industry has, you know, somehow an easier time at it that they don't. But I'd say, you know, for future, it's collaborating, asking us. You'll hear yes, please, you know, from our team about new ideas that we can get involved in.
I do want to ask you one last question. And you had mentioned before some of the growth in your prepackaged food. You know, I think one of the things that as a producer, many times we have an opportunity to maybe talk to the feedlot person. Maybe we have an opportunity to talk to the packer. Very seldom do we have the kind of opportunities you do to talk to retailers, restaurants, and ultimate consumers. What do you hear from consumers about food trends? We hear everything about, you know, snacking and those options. We hear about how they like to prepare food, the popularity of millennials and their intrigue with food and going to food festivals and shows and so forth. From your seat in the bleachers, what are you hearing and seeing from a consumer perspective that we should keep an eye on as we think about how we operate our businesses in the beef industry over the next 5 years?
Transparency and traceability. You know, people, I'd start there and say consumers, and I wouldn't say it's just a millennial thing. A lot of consumers are so engaged with their food, they really, I mean, you've seen it and you've probably done it. You're out having a nice steak in your plate, and, you know, you like how it's presented, you're taking a picture of that, you're sending it to your friends or posting it, and you want to be proud. You have this experience about what you're doing, and it's really sort of food as entertainment. And so I'd say that the traceability up the line, the experience that the consumer has, they want to know, in some cases, you know, where was this raised and who was, you know, the rancher that had that? What's their family like? They have so many desires for that. And then I think it's just, you know, are these people that are making the food, how did this food got here? Are they good people?
Yeah.
Are they focused on the right things? It said it in your video. It's just good people doing good things.
Yeah.
That's what the consumer wants. And then the customer, like, you know, Wendy's or anybody else, they're interested in bringing that story, you know, to their consumers, and they need that dependability of the supply chain to support that, and I would say in a growingly transparent way.
We have a good story to tell, don't you think? Would you join me in thanking Tom Hayes? Not many CEOs would come, carve out a day of their time, and come and be this transparent. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.